instantly acknowledging me and realising I was the woman they wanted to see, they barged past Penny. Miss Brown, I presume? Struggling to speak through the haze of my mind, I babbled. Yes. Alison Brown, Ally? The female officer cut in. Yes, Miss Brown. She raised an eyebrow at me, clearly not impressed with my attire. We would like to ask you some questions. Penny couldn't hide the shock on her face. That sweet woman was unable to believe that I could be involved in anything criminal. Question her about what? She ran over and clutched onto my arm, looking up at me. She said, you've not done anything, have you? I couldn't tell her. I just couldn't. It wasn't the fear of the police knowing. They already knew everything I'd done anyway. The seers that work for the police and the intelligence agencies are the best in the world. They wouldn't need to have a confession from me, or a statement. They were going to take me down with the evidence they already had. But Penny, I just couldn't tell her. I felt the floor moving below me and realised, in my daze, that the police officers had grabbed hold of me. The man, shoving me along, told me, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. Now you need to come with us. I shook my head and let my legs go to jelly. I had no control over them. As the police officers took a firmer grip and began to haul me towards the door, I looked at Penny, pleading for her forgiveness through my gaze. My parting words as she watched me go were, love you forever. As I was heaved over the threshold and out into the stairwell, I glanced back and saw her tear-filled eyes as she called, her voice breaking with sadness, love you forever. Her frightened tones, like those of a little girl fearing that she was about to encounter a monster in the darkness of night, will stay with me forever. I was locked in the back of the police car, with no information about where I was going or what was going to happen. I didn't bother to struggle, to try and plead with them or question what they were doing. I just gave in to them. There was no way out of this. There would come a time in the future when I could talk to someone, try and explain my actions. But these uniformed officers wouldn't listen to anything I had to say. I spared my breath and succumbed to their orders. My back felt slick with sweat, yet I began to shiver in fear about what awaited me at the end of the car journey. I had known this was coming. I must have known I couldn't have gotten away with this, and yet still this came as a surprise. I felt like I should have prepared myself in some way for this. It was no use regretting my failed decisions at that stage. I had been caught and had to accept my fate. The upholstery on the back seat was torn to shreds, the results of years worth of angry convicts tearing at the upholstery in frustration. Smells of urine and vomit swelled around my head, and I had to struggle to keep from hurling myself, swallowing down as I felt acid rising from my stomach. I looked out of the windows and watched the rain beating against the glass, and felt a strange sense of isolation from the city around me that had become blurred through the rain-drenched windows. With no idea what direction I was travelling, I felt disorientated as flashes of light blurred past me. The raindrops continued to rush down the windows, racing each other down the side of the vehicle, the speed of the car accelerating their flow. As a child, I used to love watching the rain, whether I was in the house, on the bus, or being driven around in the back of the family car. There was a certain sense of calm and comfort I found in watching the raindrops fall, extinguishing the heat of the day and returning water to the earth, while I was safe and dry watching. The rain that day had the opposite effect on me. Rather than making me feel at ease, it accentuated the feeling of panic inside me, making me feel disorientated and scared. I looked down at my hands and realised that my fingers were busy picking away at the frayed interior of the car. Throughout the journey, I heard nothing from the cops, aside from a gentle go-between of chitter-chatter. They seemed oddly removed from the situation. It seemed to me that they would have acted the same way if they had been carrying a birthday present on the back seat, rather than a convict. My handcuffed hands flew up to brace myself as the car skidded to a halt outside the police station. The cops at once sat laughing and jeering, evidently happy that their assigned career meant that they were able to drive like unruly teens without getting pulled over. The woman got out and opened the passenger door before yanking me out by the elbow. Rain had made the pavement slick with grease and dirt, which quickly sunk into the sides of my slippers and left my feet feeling damp and sticky. I let her pull me up the steps and into the station, not wanting to put up a fight at this stage and risk losing my rights, what few rights I had left. She shackled me to a wall of a waiting room where I was looked down on by everyone there, surrounded by an assortment of ever more grimy and terrifying looking people. My eyes darted around the room, trying to understand who all these people were, and trying to suss out who might be my future cellmate. I got a glimpse of her badge as she announced me to the guys on the front desk. Her name was Joy. Irony was clearly having a good day. The other guy must have stayed in the car, or have stayed outside smoking, because I didn't see him again. I can't remember how long I was sat there. I kept my head down and blocked everything out. It could have been minutes or hours. Then I heard my name being called. Still chained to the wall, unable to move from my sticky plastic seat. I was in no position to get up. I looked up to see an older cop walking around the waiting room. I jangled my cuffs in an attempt to grab her attention. She smiled and walked towards me. I already liked this cop better. She had a kind face and a soft, round frame. I couldn't picture her chasing down bad guys or taking part in a shootout. The grey wisps of hair framing her soft cheeks suggested that she was counting down the days to retirement, and that a job at the station was her last career move. "Hello, dear. You need to come see the detective. Sorry about the wait." She had to come in from Queens. Not sure how long I'd been there, I wasn't worried about the wait. It wasn't as if I was in a rush to go wherever they were going to take me. Uncuffing me from the wall, she guided me through a back room with an ominous black door. The cop lowered her voice. "I warn you, dear, that lady's one tough cookie. I wouldn't try messing with her. Just tell her straight what you have to say." "Thank you." I tried to muster another smile, but my hope was fading fast. I was led into the room, my hands still cuffed in front of me, and came face to face with the two cops. There was a woman, obviously the one I had been warned about, with a sharply cut mop of hair that had been bleached into submission. As I met her gaze, I felt a chill run down my spine. There was no compassion or warmth to be found in her dark and cold eyes. In contrast to the other cops I had met earlier in the evening, this woman looked like she meant business. She wasn't in the mood for joking around, and she definitely wasn't going to go easy on me. Wearing plain clothes, she had already signalled to me that she was a higher ranking employee than the others around her, and she knew it. I could tell from the look on her face that she revelled in the joy of being able to lord her power over others. Before she even had time to speak, I had already formed a rock-solid opinion of her. I just hoped I was wrong. To the side of her was a younger cop, dressed in a uniform. He can't have been out of his 20s. I heard the door slam behind me as I was locked in with the two officers to be interrogated. "Miss Brown," the female cop questioned as she glared at me over the rims of her thin-framed spectacles. "Mrs. Brown," I faltered, fearing that in correcting her, I might set off on the wrong foot. She frowned and returned her gaze to the set of forms that laid on the table in front of her, acting as the partition between me and the cops. "Right, Mrs. Brown, my name is O'Hannigan, and this here," she motioned to the guy to her left, "is Brady." I nodded at them before O'Hannigan continued. "As I'm sure you're aware, you've been brought in today following your actions on the 17th. She referred to her paperwork and took a sip of black coffee. I could smell it on her breath as she spoke. "On this date, you assigned an incorrect career to a young boy at St. Anne's, Ethan Blackwell. Is this correct?" I didn't flinch, didn't move. Whatever I said, it would have been the wrong thing. She smirked at me, then grinned at her colleague. "We're going to play hardball, are we? Okay then, Mrs. Brown, what career did you assign to the young man?" "Ethan, that was the boy with the black hair?" I tried to play dumb, but I could tell that this lady saw through it. "I think he was assigned to work in an office. It was quite a cloudy vision, some more specific. I just write what I see." O'Hannigan stood up before slamming her hands on the desk. Her coffee almost went flying and her colleague very nearly did the same. "But you didn't, did you? That is precisely why we've brought you in, Mrs. Brown. Because you did not write what you saw. You went against the law and played God. You invented a career for this young boy." I continued to sit and stare at her, wanting to save my bargaining for the people they brought in after her. I knew there was no point quarrelling with someone of her level. I needed to speak with the intelligence services. I needed to speak with someone who understood my abilities. She continued to question me for over an hour, while myself and Brady sat in silence and stared the wily cop down. Realising she was getting nowhere, she stood up and threw my file onto the desk. "Well, that's it. You had your chance to give me a simple confession. The guys from the Pentagon will be over later. And let me tell you, they will not let you off lightly." She walked towards the door, followed obediently by her sidekick. "Your magic's almost having me sick." The door slammed behind them, and I was left in the brightly lit room with the stagnant smell of stale coffee. The clock ticked away until the morning, during which time I didn't get a wink of sleep. I must have dozed off sometime after daybreak. The sound of a key unlocking the door woke me, and I saw that the time had progressed to 9:36. Turning around, I saw the nice lady I had spoken with the previous night. "Morning, dear. I thought you could probably do with a drink." Trying to muster a smile, I thanked her and asked for some iced coffee, not wanting to risk drinking hot coffee through a straw. After that, I was left alone again, sipping away at a tall glass of iced coffee until after 11. That's when the real questions started. Behind me, the door flung open without warning and two smartly dressed men barged into the room. Before I knew it, they were sat opposite me with their papers out in front of them, ready to do business. They had a certain air about them that made me instantly sit up straight, made me feel guilty for nothing in particular. I felt like I was a little girl back at school being told off for running the corridors. I could tell these men had come from high up and that their time was worth a lot more than anyone else's in here. They were not going to mess about with small talk. Mrs. Brown, my name is Moon and my colleague here, he motioned the man to his left, who had a matching immaculate suit, is Murphy. Now I want to cut to the chase. I know you've already met with the representatives from the NYPD and that you reserved your right to remain silent, but we need you to start talking. Without breaking my gaze, he continued. We know what you did, Mrs. Brown, and we need you to confess. We need you to explain your actions, and we need this now. He sat back in his chair, folding his arms, a gesture that was shadowed by Murphy, to show that they were waiting for me to talk. My time had come. This was going to be a one chance I'd defend myself, to explain what I had done. But despite the many hours I had been confined to this room, despite the length of time this horrible crime had been circling around the recesses of my mind, I hadn't formulated a defence. I didn't know what to say. I stumbled over my words, trying to start my opening sentence on more than a few occasions, before finally pleading my case. I assigned my own career to a boy, Ethan. I'd seen him before. Murphy sat forward, resting his elbows on the table. You knew this kid? I shook my head. No, I'd never met him before, but I'd seen him. In my mind, Moon and Murphy gave each other a look that suggested they weren't fans of his magics. Trying to shake the hate away, I continued. I didn't have time to get into petty quarrels. That's sometimes how it happens with my visions. Sometimes a client walks in and as soon as I meet their gaze, I can get an image of their future in the front of my mind. Other times I have to sit with them a while and let their aura guide me. But Ethan was different. Before I'd even laid eyes on him, I was getting visions. Again, that isn't uncommon. I often get random visions of people I've never met, and then bump into them at work the next day. That said, this was nothing like I'd experienced before. This boy had been haunting me for the last year. I'd been having nightmares and panic attacks in which I'd been confronted with his future. I sighed and despondently looked at the floor, confronted with our future. My two interrogators looked at each other, giving away a feeling of confusion, before Moon asked, "Of what might that future entail? What is it about the young boy that you find so terrifying? I mean, he's only a child. How can he have been giving you nightmares?" I admit, looking at him, he looks like any other child. Yes, they can be little brats, but they aren't going to harm anyone. But my visions, my nightmares, were about his future. I have seen the man he will grow to be, and that is not a happy sight. I faltered again, as the feeling of defeat started to creep up on me, feeling that whatever I said would not get me out of the death sentence. Moon continued to question me. "And this man, he scared you?" I nodded my head and pleaded with my eyes, so much so that you took it into your own hands to play God and try and stop him becoming president. I sat dumbfounded. "Yeah, what? Did you say president?" The men both nodded in unison, and I felt my fate being written in stone. "But that's wrong. That's not what I saw." I tried to remain calm, to sound rational, but my voice continued to rise in pitch as I fought through my fear and tried to explain. "That man, that boy, is going to grow up and become a soldier. He will then go on to become the biggest terrorist the world has ever known. He will demolish cities, kill millions of innocent people. He must be stopped. I couldn't just let that happen." I sobbed as I ran out of steam, ran out of hope. I just couldn't do it. Murphy piped up. "And so, you decided that you would give him a career that took him away from the army, that stopped him becoming the head of the US military, and ultimately, stopped him becoming the greatest president we will ever know. He will be our salvation. He is going to lead America into the most terrible war that we have ever seen, and he will lead us into greatness." No more words came. I could not fight any longer. There was no point trying. Both men stood up, understanding that they had squeezed me of anything useful I had to say. But, to my horror, before they left, Moon bent down and said in my ear, "Your little trick didn't work, witch. We've already covered that tattoo, and Ethan will fulfill his destiny."
Thanks for listening. If you could remember to rate, review and subscribe, and I'll see you back here next week for the next instalment. Bye!